Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun. It relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family and associates. We're well over 600,000 listeners, so we're very thankful and humble for that. Now, today we have a wonderful show. We're going to talk a little bit about the climate, but you know what? We've all walked around the streets. We've seen the discarded plastic. I mean, if you're in San Francisco, you're going to see all the discarded syringes downtown, parks, landfills. And the reality is plastics never break down, and they cause a multitude of problems, contaminating land, fisheries, the whole shot. Well, guess what? We have Jeff Gold. He's the CEO of Nexus. He's going to walk us through how he created the world's first 100% commercial circular waste plastic solution. So just so you understand, he took 3 million pounds of landfill plastic that would just contaminate the land and turn it into high-grade oil. It can be used for many things. It's wonderful. I'm also going to be talking about, you know what, the ultra-wealthy, they've used Roth or IRAs to their advantage. And the reality is, I'm going to walk you through how you can too. Up next, we're going to be talking about the Colonial Pipeline, the cyber attack. You know what? As you know, it was recently attacked. It carries gasoline, jet fuel from Texas to the East Coast to New York. And that whole system had been adversely impacted. The White House and the FBI, hey, it was due to a ransomware attack where criminal groups held hostage data until ransom was paid. You know what? This breach has, you know, heightened the vulnerabilities in the nation's energy infrastructure to cyber attacks. We have Regine Bonnet of RB Advisory, which is who's going to help us understand this. Now, before I say welcome to the show and introduce Regine, I want to tell you a little bit about her, okay? She's a highly sought after speaker within the cyber industry. She's a recognized leader in several technology industries, from publications and associations. She's got more than 20 years of extensive experience in the field of cybersecurity, risk management, and compliance in industries such as healthcare, financial, legal, government, energy sector. She's worked with small businesses, large businesses. You know what? In fact, she was recognized by her industry as a business and technology leader, most recently by Consulting Magazine. She's considered one of the women leaders in technology. Regine, welcome to the show. We're just happy you're here.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here. Always love to talk about technology and cybersecurity.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. When it comes to ransomware and, you know, people who have their identity stolen and all that kind of stuff, a lot of times people just don't realize or understand what's happening. And the reality is, you know, I was looking at statistics on just robocalls. You know, 1 in 3 Americans have lost money due to robocalls. It's a very big business for these criminals. And you know what? So is what's happening with cybercrime. Now, before we really jump into that, I'd love to hear a little background on you. What's your story? How did you get into cybercrime?
You know, my story started at 12, right? It's always, there had to be a love for the field itself before it is cybercrime as it is. I started at 12 years old following my seventh grade teacher for programming. So understanding programming, I don't know if anyone remember the green turtle on the floppy disk, right? So that's how I started.
You're dating us.
I'm telling you, I know, right? And then the 90s was the awesome time. And then went into robotics. And after that, I tried so many things at home that my mom sent me to engineering school. And, and moving through the parts is always, for me, is solution being impactful, trying to understand how the whole ecosystem works. Curiosity again landed me into, what is the business need, right? From a conversation with a client to how we don't understand what their needs are, what things that they have to do. You don't understand the business. I'm like, well, you're right, I don't. So understand the business meant that there's governance, risk, compliance, right? that is engaged into that. Hence what cybersecurity is, right? Cybersecurity is about the business. And then the governance, the risk, and the compliance. Now the technology, which is the tech solutions driven, mm-hmm. now is being assessed to really meet that business initiative because you need guidance, right? So with all that, I always volunteer to be where no one else wants to be. And here we are today. It's fun to me because it's always about, like I said, being impactful, solving, being part of a solution, and it's an ever-changing environment. So it keeps you up at night for different reasons.
You know what? I love the part where you said, it's fun for me. So that makes this easy. So, you know what? When it comes to the Colonial Pipeline attack, okay, I don't think everybody really understands exactly what happened. Could you help us understand that?
Well, when you're looking at the, from what happened in the Colonial Pipeline, it really, you know, every company, when you look at it, right, and are susceptible to an attack. And, you know, what news are still coming out, still new findings, but preliminary things are just small things, right? It was a phishing from a campaign that was done, and then now ransomware comes into play, right? So it wasn't ransomware where now their infrastructure was mobilized, right? In the sense that no one could access anything, and now you're being told that you have to pay a certain amount of money. Now, in the sense of the company, where the company is and what it stands as a part of a critical infrastructure for the United States, it poses a lot of risk, right? And we saw what happens within a short period of time. And that's why, you know, the government had to be involved and trying to facilitate what the next steps are in order for them to gain back,
control. I want to break this down just a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, for example, somebody in the company receives an email,
yes,
that has some malware or something like that on it, and they select that email to respond to it, and that malware embeds itself in the infrastructure of the company's,
yes,
electronics.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then once that malware is in there and it's been activated, it just seizes up everything so nobody can do anything.
Yes. And at that time, everything, it depends on how long it's been there, how fast you can respond, and what type of tools or processes that you have in place to catch it. It could eventually mobilize the whole company as a whole, the whole infrastructure, your data sources, your computers, your servers, which brings you to a fact where you cannot operate at all, right? You're at a standstill.
Okay, so let's I know you work in different industries. So when we talk about, you know, healthcare, you know, everybody has healthcare. And if there's an attack at a healthcare company, that means they have access to somebody's health insurance information,
yes,
their health record, their social security number, their birth date,
yes,
and that information can be either stolen, used, or held ransom. So, you know what? The doctors don't get paid. You can't get the care you need, or you can't get the coverage you need, or your information gets stolen and you get your identity theft. Is that kind of the size of it?
Yes. When do you start? I'll be advising. You know, yes, you eloquently put it together. The reason why medical records, right? You've seen hospitals, which should be the safest ground, right? It's a safe, mm-hmm, ground at any war, right? And war hospitals, no one bombs the hospitals. But now you've seen that there's no one left immune, no one left untouched. And the reason why, medical records, especially the electronic version or the paper version, right? So it depends on how the ransom is being done, conducted. Especially on the data side, is because inside your medical record, all the information's in there, right? And then on top of that, not only do I have your information as a patient, I have your significant other, your children, your parents. There's a lot of information. So now all I've done is, when I went after one person, I have all the other people's information in the sense of credit card payments. How do you make payments? Who are you? Who was the next person? Their phone numbers, their contact information. And now you see how things just starts, you know, formulating into a tree and branches out, right? Because, mm-hmm, that is where the mindset is. It's not one record, it's many. And now I can duplicate and become you. And especially,
oh, wow,
in the fact, there's two different aspects, right, to anything. There's an emotional aspect, there's a financial aspect, right? So some people do it because now how does, so a personal or family member gets medical help, right? Help. And the sense is, if I cannot steal that identity and go somewhere else, by the time they catch it, it's too late, but that person can gain some type of medical, you know, help. So mm-hmm. you see there's a difference, right? Depending on who does it and how it's being done. And then now is you have the financial rewards, right? Especially on large databases, large medical record companies. It's a lot of information. And by the time you as a consumer, an individual, really get a whim of it, is probably 2, 1, 2, 3 years down the line, where now it's turned into a larger scope of identity theft, right?
Yeah, no, I heard about that because, what is it, the state of South Carolina, one of the revenue people brought their laptop home and they were using it home and it got hacked. And the medical, not the medical, but the tax records got taken. And one of the persons from the FBI says, the governor was going to pay for identity theft protection for 1 year for everybody. And they said, you know, that's a waste of time because you just told the criminals when to go start using it. And I was like, oh, my God, it's that simple. And that's also really scary.
Yes.
At the same time. So, okay. So now we understand how ransomware gets through and, you know, why it happened. It sounds really simple for that to occur. And I'm a financial consultant. So when you get into the financial industry, that gets even scarier.
Yes.
Because that's everybody's financial records. And I know big broker dealers have safeguards and big insurance companies have safeguards and stuff like that. But in some cases, from your experience, possibly, will some of this ransomware or malware be sitting there for years until somebody's ready to pull the plug, so to speak, and pull their crime?
Yes. So no, yes. And that's, there's different levels, right? Different form of attack. Is there an attack where I need money now, or an attack where I know what I'm amassing a lot of information, right? So, and you've seen that a lot in larger organizations, even the smaller ones. If it's taking about 206 days for a large organization to even know they've been attacked, right? So imagine the smaller businesses or the individual itself, right? So in that sense, yes, you could have, part of it, when we talk about phishing email, a lot of that is where some of the links come, right? Or someone just give their credentials. Mm-hmm. Hey, if I know the company, sometimes it's not the person, right? It's not the company A that I hacked into. It's really who company A is attached to that I'm going after, right? Because we all interconnected as a outsourced environment that we live in. But when you look at it, yes, they could be there for days or years, right? We have examples as Marriott. And it's through a merger. It's not even Marriott. It's because they purchased, another entity and they were residing there, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have examples as Equifax.
Yeah.
A large corporation with team members, skill set, even outsource vendors that can help them. But because of
information. Hey, Regine, I'm gonna cut you off right there because we need to go to break.
Okay,
hey guys, awesome. This is mesmerizing right now. So you're going to want to stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Regine, okay?
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. This is Steve Sexton. Hey, we've been talking with Regine Bonet of RB Advisory about cybercrime. It's been memorizing. You're going to have to stick with us. I do want to let you know that Scoremaster.com is bringing this all to us. So did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car, to applying for a new credit card. How fast is ScoreMaster? One member raised their credit score 33 points in just 5 days, 43 points in a couple of weeks. ScoreMaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can try ScoreMaster for free. That's right, ScoreMaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to ScoreMaster.com/savings. That's ScoreMaster.com/savings. Again, that's ScoreMaster.com/savings. You know what? Again, I want to thank ScoreMaster.com, and I also want to thank you for tuning in and appreciating letting your friends and family members know about the show. All our replays are available at SavingWithSteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight with Saving with Steve, and I encourage you to subscribe to our Spotify or Apple Play channel to never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. So, Renee, welcome back to the show. I want to thank you again for being here, because all this is just exciting news to me, because I've done a lot of interviews with people that work in the identity theft world and all that. But what a lot of people don't realize is, you know what, these identity thefts start with ransomware. Either they're doing it to you, the company you're working with, or the government agency that you might be working with. And you know what, it's kind of scary, because, you know, one of the big questions I have for you is this. Our country, it seems, based off what I saw with the Colonial Pipeline attack, is ill-prepared, and basically our businesses are ill-prepared as well, because I don't know that they really understand this that well. Am I right or wrong? Or
well, you know, because from our experience with what we've been seeing, and yes, you could definitely look into it and say, yes, we are ill-prepared in the sense that there's more education and awareness that needs to take place when it comes to cybersecurity, from the consumer to small business to medium-sized businesses and large enterprise have a grasp on it, but they're still susceptible, right? But when you look at the, what is it? What are the needs, and understanding that this is something that is serious that we need to take into our own businesses and understand that it is a business decision. Until that takes place, we will not be prepared for what's to come, because we see it as a cost and not an investment.
Yes. Well, I will say this, being a financial consultant, I have some one individual that had sort of a ransomware issue, and that was after they were able to get his data. And as a result, it created some serious legal issues for him. Yeah. Because yes, they expected him to protect that data, or his company to protect their information. Yes. Because some of those individuals had their identities theft. And some of them had cards and all that kind of stuff that were taken out in their name, some loans and so on. And people don't realize how this, I call it a supply chain, but the chain of how this could only run all the way down to your kids.
Yes.
Because one of the things I did know about with the kids, if you have young kids and they steal the identity, they could use that identity for years. I'm like 10, 12, 15, 18 years, especially if they have a newborn.
Yes.
And sometimes it's as simple as saying, hi, here's my little baby that was just born on Facebook, because, you know, it's interesting.
Yes. And you know, not to cut you off, I apologize.
No, I actually wanted your feedback.
Well, you know, yes. In first bout of all, you know, cybersecurity incidents, it starts in the physical realm and in identity theft, right? And that turned into more of a rampage as companies started to use the platforms, the technology, and integrate with it more. And you're absolutely correct. I've had friends that have had their, when they started, I started talking to them as they started checking their own children, young children, you know, social security numbers and information, realizing their kids have houses, have been able to purchase homes. And imagine you're at a young age, and by the time you're 18, trying to get into starting your own credit, and it's ruined, not because you ruined it, because someone else did it on your behalf, right? It's good if it's established credit. It's never good, and you know, if it's not. But yes, so, you know, the thing about it is not everyone, if you don't understand something, you have to seek the advice, right? You have to look into, okay, well, cybersecurity, I'm hearing about this. How does it affect me? Everyone is susceptible to a breach, to an attack. And that data it's not today and it's done, right? It's always the fact that is why, you know, when they're requiring that you have to companies and you have to pay for credit monitoring for 3 years, right? And on top of that, now certain states and certain legislations are even allowing victims to be able to seek civil action lawsuits, right, against the companies or against the individual. And then now you still have to pay for operations. So there's more to this that, more the cost accumulates as things progress, not just because you pay the ransom and you're back to order and you keep everything quiet that you think everything's done. But people now are hiring companies that can help them trace back how their identity was taken, right? So if they're able to trace it back to you as the individual or the custodian of it, then, you know, they're still able to come and get some civil reparation, if you want to call it that. And those are the times that are changing because data, the collection of data, how we interconnected as a source, as companies, and you mentioned the supply chain, which is where background heavy of what I do is how do we help the supply chain protect itself, hence protecting everyone else.
Now, if you're just the average everyday person out there right now, what would be the best advice to give them in reference to cybersecurity and their own personal data?
So one is to, we look at monitor your information, research yourself, right? I think one of the things someone knows, Google yourself and see what's out there, right? So because information is easily obtained. Also to monitor your credit reporting, the different facets, the different reporting agencies as well. Although I know there was one that was hacked, I understand, but trying to look into monitoring your name, your email addresses, be mindful of where you are when you're using your computer, everyone looks forward to have internet services, but if you're in a public place, be mindful of where you are and what you're using your computer, your information for. And, and those are little small things that you can do as an individual. And even in your home, depending on who your internet service provider is, they have certain, you can download their security tools that can help protect the internet users, change your password on your router as well. Create different accounts on in the wild. We call it segmented, where you have a guest network and then you have your home network that will help you as well when you get when you have visitors, right? That can prevent things from happening. You being hacked in your own home. If you learn how to protect your home itself, then you can definitely go out there and finish helping as a whole in the company you work for. We do have monitoring services out there that can help you monitor your information on the dark web, what we call dark web. I know the bank institution that can help you as well. And then also too, if you pay for the service with the three service credit reporting bureaus, right?
That's wonderful. Regine, I want to thank you for being on the show, but I also want to ask you, there's many people who are driving around listening to the show right now. Where they work at businesses, they work for businesses, they might be IT people, they might be small business owners. How can they get a hold of you so they can get your advice, counsel, because you're obviously at the forefront of all this. And why not have somebody at the forefront that has all the experience to help me out?
No, awesome, awesome. Thank you so much. But yes, they can reach, go on our website, www.rbadvisoryllc.com, or just, or call us at 407-794-5668. And we'll be more than happy to schedule a time with you to discuss, with the businesses and the industries and any IT professionals of what's next. What are you doing? How can we be a valued partner to you and help you see what you don't see while you're on the inside? And that's what we do our best.
One other question about your service. Do you do anything internationally? Do you help?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. It's a global issue. I say it's a planet issue, right? So yes, we do stuff internationally because, again, what we do is something that every company needs, US and also on the global. We've seen a lot of changes as well on the UK and the EU, right? Mm-hmm. Their own data privacy. And we've done work across the world. So my claim to fame is I've seen the day twice. So there you go.
The reason why I was asking, and it's a shameless plug, we just got started with UK Health Radio, which is our show is dispersed to 85 countries. So I wanted to make sure our listeners from overseas have an opportunity to possibly use your service and help us. So, or you can help them. Sorry. Yeah. So, Regine, I just want to thank you for sharing that information with us. I know it's valuable to our listeners, and keep being a woman leader in technology. I think that's very, very important. Just keep leading the way because people need you. So with that, I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, and I wish you the best of day and stay healthy.
Thank you for having me, Steve, and you the same. Thanks. Right. I keep bringing the news to the people that needs it best and keeping it innovative. So have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Everybody, that was Regine Bonet at RB Advisory. Wonderful lady. If you need help, just go to the website at rbadvisory.com. And they'll schedule some time with you and have a lovely chat and see how they can help.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, that was Regine Bonet of RB Advisory. Hey, if you have a cybercrime issue or concerned about it, whether you're a small business or a large business, finance, health, financial, hey, go to rbadvisory.com, ask Regine, they'll get you on the phone, talk to you, see how they can help you out. Now, you know what? Up next, we're going to have some Jeff Gold of Nexus. First 100% circular recycling plastic here in the United States. This is wonderful. You're going to want to stick around for that. But right now, you know what? The ultra wealthy have made full use of an individual retirement account. And you know what? I'm going to walk you through on how you can do the same. Okay. Now, according to ProPublica, okay, which is an investigative reporting group, they indicated Peter Thiel, one of the founders of PayPal, had $5 billion in a Roth IRA as of 2019. After in 1999, it was only worth $2,000. Okay, what he apparently did is use a self-directed Roth account, which let him hold alternative investments or assets like private company shares of PayPal when it really wasn't worth very much, or real estate. And, you know, the things you can't regularly invest through a Fidelity or Schwab Roth, okay? But here's the big thing. This thing grew, obviously. PayPal's gigantic. The strategy that you need to know about is not just available for the wealthy. It's available to all investors, okay? You know what? Sometimes it seems like, you know, rich people can benefit from the tax code. And some ultra-wealthy individuals have amassed hundreds of millions of dollars or even billions of dollars in tax-sheltered Roth individual retirement account, according to ProPublica, okay? But again, I just want to make sure this is clear. The strategy generally available to everyone who wants to use it. In fact, Ed Slott even said, the greatest thing about a Roth, it's at everybody's best tax shelter. For a traditional 401k or an IRA, you generally get a tax break when you contribute the money and then pay taxes on the withdrawals when you retire, okay? With a Roth, okay, the account comes with no upfront tax break, which means you got to pay taxes on the money you put in there. But once you put it in there, you take out the money. It's called a qualified withdrawal. They're excluded from federal income taxes. Well, there's income limits set for who can contribute directly to a Roth. Investors with higher incomes are available to convert assets in traditional IRAs or 401ks, whose withdrawals and retirements are taxed at ordinary income rates, okay? Here's how it works. With a Roth IRA, you're paying taxes on the money you convert. So that means if you have $100,000 in an IRA, you take out $10,000, you're paying tax, okay? Once you've paid the tax and it's in an IRA, it grows tax-free as long as you've held it for at least 5 years and you're over the age of 59 and a half. Now, Mr. Thiel apparently used a self-directed Roth IRA, okay? This is the type of account that comes with some tax benefits, as the same tax benefits as a Roth, standard Roth account, okay? tax-free growth, untaxed distributions, okay? But you also allows you to invest in assets that are unavailable in a regular Roth account. So here's what I'm talking about when I say unavailable, okay? You have firms like Fidelity, Vanguard, you know what? Schwab, okay? They only have traditional stock bonds, mutual funds, real estate investment trust, annuities that you can put into a Roth. Those are not considered alternative. Alternative investments are things like, you know what, PayPal's original shares before it went on the stock market. It's investing in a secured note. It's investing in real estate. These are all considered alternative investments, okay? Now, so that means they're not available through a specialized custodian. Now, again, it's not just the wealthy you can do this. You can do this. Every single person that's listening to this right now can set up an individual retirement Roth, okay? Or a Roth IRA, okay? Now, there's some contrast here. You're the one who's putting in the accounts. These custodians will not police you, which means they're going to say, hey, we're not going to advise you on breaking tax laws. That's on you. So the reality is you either have to get some advice and know exactly what you're doing. When it comes to the assets you put in that account, you can sell them at any point, okay? Presumably at a profit. You can use his proceeds to purchase other investments in that account, all under the tax-free Roth envelope. Now, here's the big thing. You are the person who's responsible for the accounts you put it in. So if you're buying certain investments and they go belly up, that's on you. It's on nobody else but you, okay? If you're bringing assets in there, you have to have those assets evaluated or valued before they go into the Roth, because the money that they're valued, that's what you're paying taxes on before they go into a Roth. So you got to make sure you're really clear at that, okay? Now, once you've got that in there, and anytime after that, hey, it's tax-free, okay? Even if a self-directed Roth or IRA wouldn't be a good fit for you, you'd still get the tax breaks, even if you've invested through a standard Roth IRA. One of the rules of thumbs here for an individual retirement account that's a Roth, if anything you think that's going to have a high growth potential should go in a Roth. Why? Because you know what? I know some people who purchase shares of a company, and I won't go into it, the name of the company, but you know, quite frankly, well, I will. They bought Las Vegas Sands for about $10, okay? And they put it in a Roth. They bought a tremendous amount of shares. And then they sold it at 127. They made 12 times what they put into it. That's some high growth. That happens with private stock, okay? Sometimes that happens with even people that have real estate. So you really need to take a look at that. Make sure it's a good fit for you, okay? One of the reasons why you want to look at a Roth, and Ed Slott agrees, Roth accounts can also help you avoid the uncertainty of where tax rates will be when you retire. Now, hey, we've heard our current president talk about raising income taxes. And you know what? That's probably going to happen somewhere in the next 3.5 years. I don't know when, but if you had money in a Roth, you would not have the issues of that or would not have to deal with that. Secondly, you have 3 tax allocations or tax strategies. One's taxable, okay? Interest income, capital gains, all that kind of stuff, ordinary income. You have tax deferred, which is your IRAs, 401ks, annuities, and then you have tax free, okay? If you are to diversify your tax allocation, you could end up paying less money on your income in retirement. So imagine this, you have Social Security income, you have your IRA required minimum distribution income, and you have Roth IRA distribution, okay? On your income from your Social Security, you're paying anywhere from tax on 50 to 85% of it, still tax break. You're paying all the tax on your required minimum distribution. You pay no tax on the distributions that come from your Roth IRA. So if you have $100,000 income and 85% of $30,000 or about $26,000 is getting taxed, plus the $30,000 from your IRA is getting taxed. So if you add those two together, that's only $58,000 when you have $100,000 worth of income, puts you in a lower tax bracket, which means you can do more and pay less taxes. This is a wonderful segment. This segment was brought to you by Scoremaster. Did you know that the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but had no idea on how to do this? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approval, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home, to leasing a new car, to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raises credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. ScoreMaster is so easy, it takes a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can try ScoreMaster for free. Try ScoreMaster for free. See how many points that you can add to your credit score. Go to ScoreMaster.com/savings. That's ScoreMaster.com/savings. Again, that's ScoreMaster.com/savings. Hey, look, stick with us. We're going to be right back. We have Jeff Gold, who's going to talk to you about how they're going about turning plastics into oil and wax and recycling and creating an impact to our economy. Stick with us. We'll see you soon.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us again here at the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Now, in the second half of the show, we have a special treat for you. You know what? You could probably look around any city. You know what? For example, it was in San Francisco a few weeks ago. We were downtown. We saw all the plastic disposed syringes in the street. You see waste. If you go out to the beach, you've seen the big plastic slicks out in the oceans, parks, landfills. You know what? The reality is that plastic never really breaks down, okay? Because of issues with landscape, land, fishing, and more. Well, we have the CEO of Nexus, Jeff Gold, to walk us through how his company has created the first 100% commercial circular waste plastic solution. So let me give you an idea here. You know what? He's been able to divert 3 million pounds of landfill-bound plastic and turn it into high-grade oil that can be used for a multitude of things. So think of this. All that waste is getting converted. Isn't that wonderful? You don't have to see it. It doesn't have to contaminate things. It doesn't have to destroy parks and fishing lakes, oceans, and so on. So, Jeff, I want to welcome you to the show. I want to thank you for being here.
Well, Steve, I appreciate the opportunity and very, very anxious to get going here.
I'm with you. So, you know what? I always like to get an idea, you know, what drew somebody to do what they do. So help us with your little background. I was reading a little bit. My understanding is, as a kid, you were concerned about the climate. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I grew up in kind of a rural part of upstate New York. It was, you know, beautiful countryside. And I was always outside playing and doing stuff. And, you know, like any kid, I had toys and plastic toys and things and they would break. And I would, you know, I actually puzzled at the time. It's like, so I know paper kind of breaks down and I know metal rusts and goes away. And I said, what happens with this plastic stuff? Because this doesn't seem to go away. And, you know, I was a kid, so I didn't really take it much more than that. But as I got older, of course, my interest kind of continued there. And it was a situation where my professional career has been entirely spent in the environmental remediation business. And of course, now with Nexus. So my goal, I guess, personally and philosophically, has been trying to improve the planet by either removing highly dangerous chemicals, as I do with my other company, and handling waste issues like we see now with the plastic pollution problem. So I guess it's always been just my personality has been geared towards environmental restoration and trying to leave the planet, I guess, really the bottom line is trying to leave the planet a better place than when we came to it.
Well, it's a noble mission. I appreciate you sharing that with us. So Here's the big thing, okay? I don't think people really understand the real problem with plastic, you know, waste. Could you, you know, give us an idea of what people, what's really out there, what we're missing? Because too many people look at their own little lives and say, hey, I'm just living my own little life here. I have a plastic water bottle here. I throw it in the trash, no big deal. Or, you know, sometimes it doesn't make it in the trash and it floats away in an ocean or a lake, or, you know, it's there in a landfill or somewhere out in the forest. You know, what's the issue?
Well, yeah, I think you, I'm sure, know, and I'm sure many of your listeners also know that, you know, right now in the United States, we only recycle about 9% of the plastic that we produce. So that's a pretty abysmal rate. Now, you know, other countries, some are doing better, some are doing much worse, depending on where they are. Europe has a pretty good recycling rate. But what happens with this stuff is that, you know, back in the 60s, when plastics first came about, we were, as a culture, sort of trained to say, here is this great material, it's cheap to make, it's lightweight, throw it out, use it once, throw it away. That's the beauty of it. So we were trained as a society to view plastic as something, you know, not real valuable, but use it once, throw it out. And we're still kind of overcoming that training that happened early on. Now we realize that natural gas, crude oil, all of that goes into making the plastic. And in any other context, we'd say, wow, that's a pretty valuable source. We pay money. We pay money to heat our houses, to fuel our cars, to do all these different things. Well, plastic is that same resource. It's just in a different form. So, you know, why do we have this problem? We have this problem because there's so many forms of plastic. Plastic comes in many, many flavors, many varieties, and it's hard for people to understand what's good, what's not, what's recyclable, what's not. And there is a variation there. And we can talk about that a little more as we go on here.
Wow. So when we look at like global, like for example, I look at these numbers and I say, I saw this, it said the global consumption for plastics is like 299 million tons. Okay. So give somebody an idea visually of what a ton of plastic looks like.
Ton of plastic would look like, if you can envision a square, and this is how we get them in our facility here to process it. They come in bales. They come in large bales.
Okay.
What that means is if you can envision a square box that's probably about 6 feet on a side by maybe 4 feet tall, that would be about a ton of plastic after it's, you know, been compressed in a baler and things like that. That's probably the only good way to do it. Now, there's some plastics that are much more dense, rigid plastics, for instance, things like your shampoo bottle or your laundry detergent bottle versus film plastic, like your Ziploc baggies or the plastic bags that you can get at the grocery store. So there's a difference in density, but when it's all compressed and packed together, you know, something of that size is probably about a ton of plastic.
Oh, wow. So that's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot.
So now, so here's the question. How does Nexus go about breaking down the plastics and doing that conversion back into oil?
Great question. And it's something that is very simple in one sense and very complex in another. And this also goes back to what we were just saying about the differences in plastics. So basically, the way we have categorized plastics, at least here in the US and elsewhere as well, but the plastics are broken down into a 1 through 7 category. Number one, plastics are your PET. That's your water bottle you mentioned. Number two is your shampoo bottle and your laundry detergent bottle. That's your polyethylene plastic. Number three, PVC. You know, you've seen PVC pipes for plumbing and things like that. Number four is your PE, polyethylene again, only this time it's called low density. And that's most of your films. That's your Ziploc bags. That's all your shrink wrap and all these things like that. Number five is polypropylene. Now, polypropylene is a lot of food containers and things like that that you get, the rigid plastic there. Number six is your polystyrene, which is your styrofoam, you know, your all your packing material. And then number seven is kind of a catch-all category. Seven is the plastics like nylons and urethanes, acrylics and polyesters, things like that. It's all the other plastics.
So clothes, nails, tires, yeah. All sorts of stuff.
All sorts of stuff. So basically what we take in and how we do this is we take in the 2, 4, 5, and 6. So we take in polyethylene, polypropylene, and polystyrene. Those are the only plastics that really convert into either wax or oil, which is what we're trying to make. The other materials, the PET, the water bottles and the PVC, they break down into products that are not oil. They make other byproducts. They create these materials that'll clog up our pipes sometimes if we get too much in it. PVC breaks down into acid, which we don't like to see. It gets in the oil and it erodes our equipment. So we try to keep that out. And the number sevens also have, they don't make oil. So we're not interested in it. You know, we don't want to waste our resources and energy on something that's not going to give us something back in return. So how we do this is very simple. Here's the simple part. You heat the plastic up with no oxygen around. You can't have any oxygen in there. Otherwise, you know, I don't know how many of your listeners know that, you know, if you light a piece of plastic, it's going to burn. Well, that's because there's air around. So if you heat this plastic up with no oxygen around, that's what's called pyrolysis. So that's the process we used. And what it'll do is that plastic heats up and then just starts coming apart. It starts breaking apart and it gets smaller and smaller. Think of it as a long chain of beads. That's your plastic polymer. And what the heat does when put into this situation is it's like a scissors and it just starts snipping that long chain of beads apart into smaller and smaller chains. And those are known as hydrocarbon chains. Now, when we take that vapor then comes out of our process. And when we cool it back down, it starts forming the oil and the wax those hydrocarbons make up. You know, a common one that people should know is, for instance, octane. You know, we know octane from our gasoline. Well, octane is 8 carbons, oct, and that's one of the things that comes out. And we get, you know, the whole spectrum from everywhere from ethane, which is very light, all the way up to really heavy waxes. And I can't even pronounce the names of those. But it's all those products that we're after. Now, that's the simple part.
Let me hold you right there. We're going to have to take a break real quick.
Oh, sorry.
So, you know what, folks? Hey, I just want to say one big thanks to Scoremaster.com. You know what? They're a wonderful partner here. Just so you know, did you know that the average American has 97 points they can add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster have cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approval, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised their credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it just takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free. See how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings. Now, stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Jeff Gold and Nexus and Saving Our Climate.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. This is the Saving with Steve Show. Hey, I want to thank you again for joining us. We've got wonderful guests here with Jeff Gold of Nexus. He's been walking us through the whole climate and turning plastics back into oil. What we're doing right now is we're talking about the contaminants that come from the recyclable parts that they bring in and how they have to make it work the same way each and every time. If you're a chef, it's a boring meal every day because, you know, it's the same thing. But for his industry, hey, it's got to come out the same way. So, Jeff, could you kind of take a step back and, you know what, at Nexus, you receive what's called feedstock, right?
Correct.
And what is feedstock made of?
Okay, our feedstock, what we call feedstock, are the plastics that come into our facility. And they come in these bales I was discussing earlier. They mm-hmm. come in these big cardboard boxes sometimes if it's loose. And that is all the material that we consider feedstock. If it's plastic, whether it's, you know, the polyethylene I was describing, or the polypropylene, or the polystyrene, all of that comprises the feedstock. It's what we feed our process to make it work. It's that simple.
Okay, so if, like, for example, there might be a recycling center or a landfill, and you have companies that would go and grab those items for you and ship it to you.
Correct. I mean, yeah, we get here, and we're based in Atlanta, Georgia, and there is a facility here known as the Center for Hard to Recycle Materials, and we get a load from them every week. And people, you know, consumers bring their materials there. They sort through it, and they know the material that we want, and then they'll bring a truckload up to us each week, and that works out really well.
Mm-hmm. And but you know what? Right now, you're processing about how many, I want to say pounds or tons per year?
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned early on, we've diverted about 3 million pounds of material out of the landfill. We've created about, right now, we're coming up on about 360,000 gallons of product so far. Now, our facility here is kind of the first of its kind. So we're not running 24/7 yet, but we are approaching that now. And we're working through various upgrades that we're making in the plant, and we're getting ready. We're designing, in fact, right now, at the next version, the next generation of this plant that will run absolutely 24/7. This plant that we have now will run that way as well once we make these upgrades. So, you know, we're running on a per week basis where we process, maybe 100 tons a week at this point, you know, which, you know, in the scheme of things, it's not a lot. We have aspirations and our goals with some of our partners here that are looking to take our material of, you know, thousands of tons, millions of tons on a per year basis, and a pretty aggressive schedule, 2025, 2030, to attain these goals. And they're really making a concerted effort to get this plastic out of the environment, put it back to use so that it can be, you know, useful again. And here's an interesting number. And it's we throw out about $80 to $120 billion worth of plastic every year. That's what we throw into the landfill. We throw into the water. We throw wherever we're throwing it. That's where it's going. So that is a resource. It's a valuable resource. And what we're trying to do, and what our partners are trying to do, is recapture some of that. And then what we do, I'm going to get a jump a little bit ahead here, but what we do is we take this, we put it through this pyrolysis process here, and we end up with wax and we end up with oil. Now, this oil could be used for fuel, but we don't really like that plan. We like to take our oil and see that carbon that's in that oil and that wax reused. And then what happens then is with our partners, they take it to their refineries essentially, and they run it through a process they have to make new plastics. And they take our oil and our wax, and now they're making brand new plastic that is identical, because we're recycling molecules here. We're not recycling plastic. We're recycling molecules at this point. And those molecules can be made into new polyethylene, new polypropylene, number of different things. And there's a tremendous desire, a tremendous need for people to put that into their products. They want to do this. They want to make products that are using recycled materials. And, you know, our goal there as a business is to be able to provide them with that material.
So from, you know what, being the financial guy, the question is, you know what, how financially efficient can it get to the point with recycling? Because a lot of times you buy recycled things and they're a little more expensive, but, you know, is there a point that you get to when you're doing millions of tons every single year that the cost for this is low enough or significantly lower to where, you know what, everybody's just recycling the things that they have and it's going back into other, you know, the same plastics as it was before. And it's one of those things that's really inexpensive.
It could be. It could get to that point. And if other companies like ourselves are successful, we'll have that supply. Right now, as an economics guy, you'll appreciate this. It's a simple supply and demand situation. Right now, we're one of the few groups in the world able to supply commercial quantities. We're shipping out a couple tankers a week here now, and there's infinite demand. At this point in time, there's a virtually infinite demand. So we expect that demand, as I was just describing earlier, as these sustainability goals for many companies are very high, and that demand is enormous. We can't even see the end of it. So right now, we are working just as hard as we can to try to make as much material as we can so that we can help supply. So at some point, that supply should rise and meet up with that demand. And at that point, you're going to see some pricing changes, I'm sure. We don't, you know, we're not in a commodity market. No one knows how to price this material yet. So we have our pricing that we've set up and everybody's happy with it. But, you know, it's hard to say where that pricing is going to go in the future.
Now, before we got started with your segment, we talked about, you know, feedstock and the fact that you need feedstock. Yes. And, you know, it's got to, you know, you got to, I'm going to say you got to supply the beast, so to speak, to make everything work.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Are there recycling plants? Are there landfills that might be able to help you with that throughout the country?
Good question. Absolutely on point here. So most of what we take in now is considered post-industrial or post-commercial, meaning it's coming from facilities and producers that are making pretty much one product. There's not a lot of other things mixed in with it. Post-consumer is sort of the holy grail here. I mean, we would like to be able to take post-consumer materials that would come from a recycling facility or even a landfill at some point. The problem here is what we talked about earlier. It's the contamination issue. You've got moisture, you've got dirt, you've got metal, you've got paper and cardboard and diapers and all these other things that are mixed in. So we are, as a country, we are getting better and better now at recycling. There's more and more effort. There's a lot of advances technically in that area to make this material clean enough for a group like us to use. Now, we even at our plant here, we pay for our feedstock. We pay a couple pennies a pound for our feedstock. Now, if we wanted to pay 50 cents a pound, we could get, you know, stuff that was really beautiful, really, really clean. You know, but our economic model doesn't permit that. You know, we have to, you know, conserve our pennies like everybody else. So, you know, we do pay for our feedstock, but, you know, we were also sorting and we're cleaning material, even in our facility here. The first step is a big shredder and we have a sort line where we have folks that are up there and they're picking out the water bottles that sneak through and the pieces of metal and the glass, and things like that, even in the clean material we get. So if we were to go to a post-consumer model, which is where we really want to be, then, you know, we're going to have to get better on the recycling end. And that's also not just the recycler's responsibility. And this is where I want to get on my soapbox here a little bit, but it's really a responsibility of us as a consumer, myself, you, your listeners. We need to get better at recycling. And that's also goes hand in hand with the manufacturers getting better at making products that can be recycled and can be easily identified as being recycled. You know, deposit programs in Europe were great. And so, you know, people are their recycling programs are far in advance of ours, and they have a much higher recycling rate and much cleaner material. So it's a combination of being able to have a viable recycling facility with a more educated consumer and a more, I guess you might want to say, educated manufacturer as well that is making products that can be recycled so the consumer can adequately and responsibly do that. So all those things play into the equation here.
That's wonderful. Now, here's the thing. I know you don't want, you know, everybody from around the United States to go bring them their plastic to your doorstep. So if a recycler, a landfill, they said, hey, we have some of this, we'd like to talk to you about it, how would they go about getting in contact with you, Jeff?
The easiest way, and Steve, I appreciate you asking that, because the easiest way to do that is to just go through our website, nexusfuels.com. We have fuels in our name, and that was when the company started back in 2008. There wasn't a circular market, there was only a fuels market, so we started with that name. But go to nexusfuels.com, and there'll be a phone number and a contact number there, and you'll speak with a woman named Jean Jordan. She handles our sourcing, and she would be more than happy to speak with you if you've got material you want to bring. That is the most pressing issue, and it determines where we are going to build our next plants in the United States, Europe, Asia, as elsewhere. And we're looking at all those places. Is where the feedstock is. Where can we get the material that's going to be here today, tomorrow, 10 years from now, so that we know we can justify building a plant there.
So perfect. That just goes with my next little plug. You know what? We just got added to the UK Health network that has broadcasts in 85 countries. And I think in like 60 days, this episode will broadcast 7 times over a period of a week in multiple time zones into multiple countries. So you, who knows, maybe somebody's going to call you and say, hey, come on, put a factory over here.
Yeah, well, great. Well, now I'm getting stage fright, you know? That's a big audience.
Hey, we just got, you know, don't worry. There's two guys. They both run recycle plants. They're the only ones to listen.
Perfect. There we go. That's good. That's a comfort too, you know?
Hey, Jeff, I really thank you for what you're doing for our economy. I thank you for being on the show. And I want to thank you all for joining us today. I truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful new information and insight at Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our Spotify or Apple channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Also, you can follow us on Facebook, join the Saving with Steve Sexton Insiders Club at savingwithsteve.us to get all the replays, exclusive access to our behind the scenes videos, the whole shot. Now, next week, we've got Jim Carroll of SAD and Chris Klesch. You're going to love Chris. Why? He's going to tell you how to travel the world for 10 cents on the dollar. No bull. Look forward to seeing you then. We got Jim Carroll. He's got Students Against Destructive Decisions. And you know what? That's an awesome interview. And we're going to look forward to seeing you next week. This is Steve Sexton signing off with Saving with Steve Show.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.